Chapter 4, Evangeline, May 14, 1923. Nell was the first to notice that the boat was in trouble. "Aren't they leaving it a bit late?" she asked. The little boat had not yet passed the point of no return, but it was heading rapidly that way. It had only just come into their view, a small black dot churning through the waters of the upper Niagara. Joshua stopped the ford and watched the boat for a moment. "Do you think their engine's out?" Nell asked.
"Aye."
It was the usual brief response that Evangeline had come to expect of Joshua, but there was a world of determination in that one small word. He started the car forward, heading towards the small craft which was picking up speed on the rushing waters. Clutching the edge of the seat as the car bumped along, Evangeline reflected that it was only a matter of chance that Joshua was with them, and wondered what the woman would have done if they'd been alone. Evangeline had started the day with determination. This was her second day at the falls, and she had awoken with the knowledge that she could put it off no longer, that time had come to see the falls. "Perhaps your brother could take us in his car," Iris suggested to Nell. As Nell laughed Iris into silence, Evangeline realized that Nell McLaren's confidence grew steadily with each hour she spent in Cornelia's company, or at least in the company of all three women. But Evangeline was inclined to believe that it was Cornelia who was inspiring Nell. "I can drive the car myself," Nell said. "We have no need of Joshua. And if we have any problems, I'm sure Cornelia will be able to help me. I understand that she can also drive a motor car." Immediately after breakfast, Nell and Cornelia brought the car around to the front gate, and they all climbed aboard. If Joshua had not happened to be working outside his boat shed when they chugged by, he would never have known that they had left. As it was, he looked up at their approach and then leapt out to stop the car. "We're just going to the falls," Nell said defiantly.
"Not like that," said her brother.
"I have every right to drive this car if I want," Nell insisted.
"I'm not disputing your right, woman. Get off your high horse," Joshua said.
Impatiently, he knocked the ash out of the pipe he'd been filling and stuffed it into his pocket. "You've something wrong with the Tappets. Can you not hear it?"
"No."
"They're knocking," said Joshua.
"Are you telling me that you can't hear that?"
"No," said Nell again.
"Well, I can."
"You can't drive it like that. You'll ruin the engine. Turn the motor off and let me fix it." There they sat while Joshua went for his tools, and very foolish Evangeline felt, especially as she knew that she would not know a Tappet if she fell over one. She thought that Joshua had made them look like naughty children who'd been caught sneaking out without permission. When Joshua finally returned, she felt a need to explain that this was no frivolous expedition. She spoke to the top of his head as he poked around in the engine. "We haven't had a chance to see the falls yet, and I, for one, thought I should see what I'm getting into."
"Aye, you should."
"Not that it will make any difference to her," said Iris, with unexpected boldness. "Mrs. Murray says she's going ahead whatever she sees. Mr. Hillsgrove is going to launch me on May 23rd. That's next Saturday," Evangeline added. Joshua looked up and their eyes met. He had interesting eyes, an unusual greenish gray with a fringe of sandy-colored lashes. "So," he said, "Jumbo Hillsgrove. He'd be fool enough to do it. When is he coming for the barrel?" "He said that there was no hurry. He won't be needing to make many adjustments."
"What? Oh, damn."
Joshua had dropped the wrench he was using. He leaned into the engine to retrieve it and came up red-faced. "What do you mean by no adjustments? You can't use the barrel the way it is. Mr. Hillsgrove says it's just fine."
"Is that really what he said, Nell?" he asked.
Evangeline leaned forward in her seat. "There's no need to ask your sister," she said. "I'm the one who's doing this, not your sister." Evangeline saw Joshua draw a deep breath, as if calling on some inner well of patience to allow him to deal with this foolish woman. "Move over," he said to his sister. "I'll drive."
"There's no need," Nell said. "I'm quite capable. I need to listen to the engine. I can't be sure I've got the adjustments right."
Nell moved over, and they set off again through the fine morning. The ford chugged its way up a steep hill, following the road along the clifftop until they saw the river running far below them in a deep gorge.
"It's beautiful," said Iris, leaning across Evangeline for a closer look. "So green."
A few yards further along, stone walls appeared along the clifftop, and houses began to crowd together along the sides of the road. They were coming into town. The gorge was deeper here, and the river running far below them was more white than green.
The buildings were bigger and included hotels and shops. Traffic was heavy. Hundreds of pedestrians strolled in the sunshine. Evangeline began to hear a roaring sound, which slowly drowned out the noise of the engine. Up in front of her, she could see a cloud of white spray. They came abreast of a large building with mock Tudor framework and a green roof. "Let's stop," said Nell. "We're almost there, and I want to show Miss Braithwaite where she'll be speaking tomorrow night. We could go into the restaurant and have a cup of tea. You can see the falls from the veranda room." "Yes," said Evangeline quickly. "That sounds like a good idea." She hadn't expected to be afraid. She really hadn't. But whatever it was up ahead of them, it was roaring and thundering and sending up clouds of spray, might be much better viewed from behind glass. She could approach it gradually and tame the beast in her mind before she actually faced it. Joshua McLaren refused to stop. "It's not a tea party, Mrs. Murray," he said. "You'll not be going over the falls sitting on a little wrought iron chair sipping tea." So they motored on past the inviting tea room with its colorful flower beds and ladies seated beneath shade trees. And then suddenly the whole awful spectacle came into view. Evangeline saw two waterfalls. The first one to catch her horrified eye was across the river on the American shore. A sheet of white water poured down endlessly onto great black tumbled rocks. Surely no one, no thing could survive that fall. She looked to her right and saw an even more massive horseshoe-shaped waterfall. This fall was the origin of the cloud of spray that filled the air and drenched the spectators on the sidewalk. Joshua stopped the car and waited. Evangeline wanted to laugh in his face. Did he expect her to get out? Did he really expect that? Did he think that her legs could carry her to the iron railing to look over into the abyss? Surely not. He opened the door for her, smiling grimly. "Mrs. Murray," he offered his arm. She took a deep, determined breath and stepped out. She reached up for his arm. He was very tall. She refused to permit even the slightest tremble in her hand as she rested it on the worn linen of his shirt sleeve. She was only dimly aware of the rest of the party trailing behind them as they proceeded across the wide sidewalk. The spray was a fine mist, which had to be brushed aside from her eyes. They reached the edge, and she let go of Joshua's arm to hold the railing with both hands. The air was filled with the roar of the water and the shrieks of seagulls circling and swooping over the tumult. "Which one?" She could hardly say the words. "Oh, not that one," he gestured across the river. "Those are the American Falls. You'd stand no chance at all there. Not that you stand a much better chance with the horseshoe." The endlessly falling waters of the Horseshoe Falls fascinated her. They roared over the edge and plunged down and down into a foaming basin. But it seemed that there were no gigantic boulders in the basins, just raging waters. It could be done, Evangeline thought. Surely she could do it. It was a terrible thing, but it could be done. Joshua McLaren pointed upwards to the rim. She found it hard to hear what he was saying above the roar of the water and the pounding of her own heart. Something about rocks up there. She looked up and saw what he meant. There were rocks, set like granite teeth along the rim. She could see only one clear path. But if the barrel could ride that path, then surely it would ride over the edge unbroken. She saw a rainbow in the mist, a complete and perfect rainbow. Forgetting for a moment the dourness of her companion, she tapped his arm and pointed, just as she might have tapped John's arm once upon a time, to show him some pretty thing. "Lilawala," said Joshua. "What?" He leaned his elbows on the rail beside her so that his mouth was close to her ear, and she could hear him. "Lilawala, the Maid of the Mist. They say that's her spirit." "She must have been beautiful," Evangeline said. "Aye," said Joshua, and turned away. Evangeline was not sure that she would ever have tired of gazing at the cascading water and the circling seagulls. So much power. Certainly the humans had tried to tame them with their sidewalks and their iron railings and little stone buildings, but nothing, nothing at all could tame that power. Better to go with it, to accept it, to ride on its back. Cornelia Braithwaite brought her back to reality, grabbing her arm and pulling her away from the railings. "I can see that this excites you," she says. Evangeline nodded her head in agreement. Her heart was pounding and she felt tears in her eyes, but not tears of fear.
Joshua was waiting for her beside the car, looking at her with undisguised scorn.
"Don't get any damned romantic notions," he said. "There's nothing but death for you here."
He went around to the front of the car to crank the engine and then climbed into the driver's seat.
"Are you wanting that cup of tea now?" he asked.
"Yes," said Iris and Nell in unison. But Evangeline could not waste time thinking about cups of tea.
"We won't need anything, thank you, unless you'd be kind enough to show us the launching area."
"I don't know what kind of fool arrangements Jumbo Hillsgrove is making," he said, "but I'll show you where I'd launch a barrel if I was going to do it."
The river widened above the falls. The water rushed past, churning across a wide area of rocks and tiny islands. Looking at the broad, innocent river, Evangeline thought how surprised the first river travelers must have been when their canoes started to gather speed, faster and faster, until there was no stopping them, and the white mist and thunder filled the air, and the water opened up to swallow them.
"What's that big rusty thing out there in the water?" Iris asked timidly.
Nell leaned across her to look.
"Oh, that," she said.
"We're all so used to it now that we don't even see it. That's an old barge that went aground just after the war."
"But it's almost on the edge. It's a wonder it didn't go over," Iris said.
"Oh, yes," said Nell. "That was a miracle. There were men on board, you know. That was quite a night. Quite a night.
Joss was only just back from Europe, and he didn't want to get involved, did you, Josh?"
"No, I didn't," said Joshua, "and I still don't. Talk about something else, or don't talk at all. I don't care."
Evangeline thought what a strange and confused man he was. Obviously, there was a story in that rusted old wreck, but there was no way that Joshua McLaren was going to allow anyone to tell that story. They all fell silent for a moment, occupied with their own thoughts. But Evangeline's thoughts had suddenly become so gloomy that she shied away from them. She had been momentarily excited, but now all she could think of was the wrecked ship she'd seen so often on the wintry shores of Kelly's Island, and the sailors fighting for their lives in the Black Lake waters. She thought about that awful waterfall. She dragged her mind away and asked the first question that came into her mind.
"Mr. McLaren, what was that name you said?"
"What?"
"The name you said when we were looking at the falls. The Maid of the Mist, you said."
It was Nell who answered her.
"Lilawala. She's the maiden of the Seneca legend."
She threw herself over the falls in an act of desperation.
"That sounds like me," Evangeline said.
"Not really," Nell said. "She was a sacrifice to the thunder gods."
"Well, I'm sort of a sacrifice," said Evangeline. "I'm a sacrifice to the gods of feminism and money, much more powerful than any old thunder gods."
"I wouldn't laugh at the thunder gods if I were you," Joshua interrupted. "You never know when you might need them."
"Poppycock," said Cornelia. "All she needs is her own good sense and a well-designed barrel."
"And she's short of both of those things," Joshua said. Before Evangeline could respond, Nell grabbed Joshua's arms and pointed to the small boat speeding down the river toward the falls, and Joshua brought the car to a screeching halt. Joshua knew one thing. The boat was passing the point of no return, and no one would be able to stop it. The boat was level with the channel marker buoy, the one that warned boaters not to proceed any further. He could only see one person in the boat, a man standing amidships trying to start the engine. Joshua knew it was too late for engines. He brought the car to a screeching halt and flung open the door. He raced along the riverbank, shouting through cupped hands. "Row!" he shouted. "Row!" His words were carried on the wind, and at long last the figure raised its head. Now he knew his danger. Now he saw the rushing waters. Desperately he tried to catch hold of the marker buoy, but the boat was moving too fast.
"Row!" Joshua shouted again. "Row for your life!"
He ran back to the car, leaped in, and turned the wheel so that he was heading back downstream, outdistancing the boat.
"Where are you going?" Cornelia demanded. "Are you abandoning that boat?"
"Be quiet, woman," Joshua hissed. "Let me think." He knew of a place, further downstream, a last possible chance. This is where the current swung in towards the shore. Not all the way in, but at least close. It was the place where that cursed barge had swung inward, giving its passengers momentary hope. That barge was still out there, of course, but he didn't have to look at it, not if he didn't want to. He didn't even have to think about it.
He had to think about this other boat. Perhaps a way could be found across the rocks. It was risky. A wrong step and he'd be in the current himself. He stopped the car again and ran to the riverbank, offering no explanation to the women in the car. He hesitated a moment on the brink and then plunged into the water. It came no higher than his waist, and he was able to move slowly away from the shore, always making sure that he was upstream of sheltering rocks in case his feet were swept from beneath him. There were moments of risk with nothing to hold on to, nothing to shelter behind, gaps to be crossed with pounding heart. At the end, he lost his footing and grabbed at a scrubby bush growing on a tiny islet. He hauled himself out of the water. There was barely room to stand, and the boat was bearing down on him fast, its occupant flailing helplessly at the oars. Joshua could see now that it was a boy no older than Danny, no older than Callum had been. There'd been no stopping that boat, but the boy could perhaps be saved. "Jump!" Joshua shouted. "Jump!" He had a powerful voice, and he used it to its fullest. The boy heard him and looked up. Joshua could see the indecision. How could he leave the boat? His only shelter. "Jump!" Joshua shouted again. The boy threw caution to the wind, abandoned the oars, and jumped. The boat swept on downstream, but the boy swam furiously. His head was barely above the water as he was carried towards the islet. Joshua flung himself flat on the ground and extended a long arm. If the current would carry the boy in just a little further, just a few feet. He was dimly aware that someone else was beside him on the island. Someone had stepped across his legs and flung themselves down beside him. Another passing motorist, perhaps. "Swim, boy! Swim!" he shouted. The boy stretched out an arm and Joshua touched his hand, but barely. It was a fingertip, that was all. He could see the boy's eyes, wide with fright, his open mouth with water rushing in to silence his screams. Joshua flung out his other arm. He had him now. Surely he had him. The power of the river was almost beyond belief. He thought his arm would be ripped from his body. He was being pulled into the water himself, pulled forward across the slippery mud surface of the island. And still, he clung to the young wrist. He didn't see the boy. He saw Callum. And he hung on, tenaciously. They were going, he and the boy, sliding down into the dark water. They were going together. Beyond the boy's terrified face, he could see a dark shape, the rusted hulk of that damn barge, lurking, waiting. Hands pulled at Joshua's ankles, dragging him back from the brink. The boy's wrist slid through his fingers, and there was nothing to grasp but emptiness. He was being pulled backwards inch by his unknown rescuer. "Let me go," he shouted. "I can get him." But he knew he couldn't. The boy was gone. Reluctantly, he gave up the fight and allowed his rescuer to pull him through the mud until he was clear of the water. His rescuer collapsed beside him, breathing heavily. "Damn," said the rescuer. "I was sure you had him." Joshua rolled over onto his back and found that he was looking at a heavily breathing and soaking wet Evangeline Murray. The red dress was caked with mud. She was barefoot, squatting on the wet ground, and she was furious. "What was he doing out there on his own? What the hell was he doing?" she demanded to know. Joshua was silent. He could still see the young face, still feel the thin wrist. "What was he doing?" Evangeline repeated. There were tears in her eyes, and Joshua wanted only one thing. He wanted to take her in his arms and tell her that everything was all right. He controlled himself with an effort. "I don't know, lass," he said eventually. "Fishing? Sightseeing? I don't know." "He doesn't have a hope now, does he?" Joshua sat up. "No," he said. "He's gone now. He's over the brink and gone. I tried. I really tried." Evangeline laid a consoling hand on his shoulder. He felt its warmth through the soaked fabric of his shirt. "I know you did," she said. "It's just that, well, he reminded me of my own boys." "And mine," said Joshua. "You have a son?" "Not anymore. He's buried in a poppy field in Flanders." "I'm sorry," she said. "I didn't know." "How could you?" he asked. He didn't mean to sound so abrupt. She turned away from him and looked towards the shore. I might need your help to get back, she said softly. At last his head cleared and he realized what she had done for him. There was no one else on the little island. There was no muscular male rescuer. There was only Evangeline Murray. How did you get out here? He asked, stunned.
I don't know, she said, wiping her eyes.
I just did it. I didn't stop to think. Joshua stood up and pulled Evangeline to her feet. She came no higher than his shoulder. Where he had walked shoulder deep, she had been out of her depth. He looked at her with admiration. You'd better give me your hand, he said. She offered it immediately. It was a small hand, fine-boned. Just touching it warmed his chilled bones. He took a deep breath and spoke carefully.
Thank you, Mrs. Murray, he said. I owe you my life.
If you get me back to shore, you won't owe me a thing, she said. He plunged into the water, holding tightly to her hand. I won't let you go, he assured her. He took one last look downstream to the place where the white mist rose into the air. There was no sign of the boat, of course, or of the boy. The thunder gods had already taken their sacrifice. He pulled Evangeline into the water beside him and set out for the riverbank. Already he had made up his mind. Somehow he was going to stop her. Somehow he was going to keep her safe. The gods had received their sacrifice. He wasn't going to let them have another one.